Okay.
Step three. Okay, we are ready to start. I'm going to share screen right away and jump right into where we were up to. So I think we missed, we had a week off last week, right? I think that was the I think we were away. But when we last met, we were talking about the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri and Yoav and Avishai running after him, and ultimately the side issue of Amasa kind of gets that's in the story of Amasa in this chapter as well. And where we left it was that Yoav is now chasing after Sheva ben Bichri, leading the army in his pursuit of this rebel. Vayavor b'chol shivtei Yisrael avela ubeit ma'acha b'chol abirim, went through all of the tribes of Israel, went to Avel, went to Beit Ma'acha, and then finally vayavo af vayika'alu vayavo afacharav, gathered his the army and the people together. Vayavo v'yatsudu alav be'avela Beit Ma'acha, and they come. Finally, he takes refuge inside this city of Avel Beit Ma'acha, and Yoav comes to, he's got him trapped, and he's trapped inside a city with a wall. And Yoav is well versed at mounting a counteroffensive against a walled city. He knows very well how to establish a siege of a city. We saw that when, just FYI. When did we see Yoav engage in a walled in a siege war against a city for a long period of time? That was the war
Yerushalayim.
against Ammon. That was the war that led to David being in Yerushalayim for a year and led to the spiral of events related to Bathsheba. So, anyway, Yoav is well versed. Vayishpachu solala la'ir. He threw a ramp or mound up against the wall of the city. V'tamod, he stood at the wall or the moat. Yoav, and the people that were with Yoav were ready to pull down the wall. If you remember, in back in sorry, back in chapter 17, when Avshalom had taken over Yerushalayim temporarily, and he had the counsel from Achitophel, counsel from Hushai. And at that point, also David was the rebel in their minds, and the question of tactics of how to take down or how to take out the rebellion of in their minds, like from David, we saw two kind of tactics or two approaches, strategies, one of Achitophel, one of Hushai. Achitophel said, "I'll take a small force, lead the battle, and go and take out David, and that'll be the end of the rebellion." Hushai now say, "Take all the army, let's go and take a city, etc." At that time, if you remember, Hushai made the comment that in his tactic of going out to take the entire army, to kind of spur Avshalom to follow his advice, he said at the time, "Be'im el ir yasef," if David withdraws into a city and under the protection of a city, not to worry. We see you call Yisrael al chavalim. The entire people of Israel will bring ropes to the city. V'sachavnu, we'll take the entire city and drag it into the river, meaning the walls of the city are not going to stop us from getting to our prey. That was the message that Hushai offered in this big global attack that they wanted to mount against David. Again, Hushai being acting there as a spy, but nonetheless, the notion of those two tactics of Shalom, a targeted strategic attack against David, Hushai, this massive global attack that would bring down even the walls of a city. When Yoav starts his campaign, if you remember, David is the one who says to him, But Abishai, Achshav Yireh Lanu Sheva Ben Bichri Mi Avshalom, that the danger posed by Sheva Ben Bichri is even greater than the danger posed by Avshalom. And so when Yoav finally catches up with Sheva Ben Bichri, he attacks the city, he besieges it, he sets down the ready to take down the walls, Mashchitim Lapila Tachoma, which is exactly what Hushai had expressed to David. He was all ready to implement that kind of massive global attack against the city of Avel Beit Ma'acha for harboring the rebellion of Sheva Ben Bichri. That's the setup for the story. Everybody with me? Okay. Vatikra Isha Chachama Minair. It was a wise woman who called out from the city. Who is she and why she's described as wise? We don't know. Well, why she's described as wise, we'll see. That's clear. Who is she? We don't know. There's a medrash that links her to the story of Sevach Bat Asher, but that would make her almost 1,000 years old. Something like 1,000 years old, which would be problematic. So, Batikra Isha Chachama Minair. This wise woman calls out from the city, and she says, Shim'u, Shim'u, Imuna El Yoav. Speak, hear, O hear. Say to Yoav, Krav Adena, Badabra Elecha. Come hither, and I will speak with you. I will engage with you. So Yoav approaches, cautiously, I assume. Vatomer Aisha, Ha'ata Yoav? Are you Yoav? She says. Vayomer, Ani, I am. He responds. She says to him, listen to the words of your maidservant. He says, I'm listening. I'm hearing. She spoke. She said, it was once said of old times. They used to say, they would surely ask counsel, seek counsel of Avel. And that would be the end of the matter. Anochi Shlumei Amunei Yisrael, I am but the peaceful and faithful of Israel. Atah mevakesh lahamit ir ve'em b'Yisrael? You seek to destroy a city, mother in Israel? These are idiomatic expressions in modern Hebrew. Shlumei Amunei Yisrael is somebody who's of peace and a faithful, loyal member of the Jewish people. Ir v'em b'Yisrael is an expression for a large metropolis, a large city, a significant city in Israel. These are modern idioms that come from this verse. She says to Yoav, we are but Shlumei Amunei Yisrael, peaceful and loyal citizens of Israel. Why would you want to destroy an entire city? Lama tivala nachalat Hashem? Why would you swallow up this inheritance of God? Vayan Yoav vayomer vayomar. So Yoav responds and says, Chalila chalila li mevalav imashrit. God forbid if I should want to destroy or swallow up a city. That is not my intent. Lochena davar. There's a man here. His name is Sheva ben Bichri. He comes from Har Ephraim. He raised his hand in rebellion against David. If you deliver him into our hands, I will leave you alone. I will walk. No harm become need fall any of you if you just hand over Sheva ben Bichri. Vatomer Aisha El Yoav, so her response to Yoav is, Hine Rosho Mushlach Elecha Ba'ad Achoma. His head will find its way over the ramparts into your laps shortly. That's what she said. Regular Joan of Arc, this one. Vatavo Aisha El Kolam Bechochmata. A woman came to her people in wisdom. Now, again, for the second time, she's called an Isha Chachama. So this is really quite an extraordinary description. It's one thing to be called Chachama once. This is already the second time in so many, in one story. And what she says to her people in Chochma, we will never know, because it doesn't say. All it says is, Vayichlatu et Rosh Sheva ben Bichri, that the next thing you know is they literally cut the head off Sheva ben Bichri, separated his head from his body, Vayashlichu Ayoav, and threw the head over the ramparts. Vayitka b'shofa, Yoav received the message, got the package, as they say. War is over. Vayitka b'shofar, blew the shofar, Vayafutsu mi'al ha'ir, and everybody dispersed. They left the city, Yishlo alav, they all went home. Yoav shav Yushalayim el ha'melech. And Yoav returns to Yushalayim to the king. End of story. End of story, end of rebellion, end of Sheva ben Bichri, end of Sefer Shmuel, for all intents and purposes, that we'll see a little bit later. That's the end of the story. It's a really fascinating little vignette, right? This little this Isha Chachama who comes to get, engage with Yoav in some kind of negotiation. And by the time she's finished, they're taking the head of Sheva ben Bichri and throwing it over the ramparts, and that's the end of the story. So what is she doing, and what is she, how does she, this whole conversation with the Yoav is fascinating. The banter, the conversation, the back and forth, the small talk. Are you Yoav? Yes. Hear me, I'm hearing you. I'm saying, she quotes a mashal, she quotes some old parable about what they used to say in old times. The banter here is really quite extraordinary, back and forth. So what's going on? So one of the interesting exercises is that when we look at a text in Tanakh, we look at it linearly, meaning we just see words. But there's a whole cadence to these words. There's a music behind it. And it's sometimes easier to, in the world of modern computers, to kind of chart it out and see who says what. And when you do that, suddenly you realize that there really is a cadence to this conversation. So in this page that I have here for you, which is here, I have taken this text literally from the opening salvo of the Isha Chachama to the end of the story. And I have charted it out. So what you have here is the full text. The only difference is that I've put her part on the right side and his part on the left side. It's like reads like a script, like a play. Okay? Play. And this is how it works. And you can see just from the amount of words that the first part of this conversation is very brief, very curt, very succinct. I want to speak to Yoav. Yoav is here. Are you Yoav? Yes, I am. Right. There's a very kind of brief, there's a brevity, there's a curtness to it, there's a formality to it. By the time we get to the end of the story, she's pouring out her heart to him and he's pouring out his heart back. It was really quite extraordinary. So what's going on? And I think what's going on has a lot to do with why she is called an Isha Chachama. What is her? Where is her wisdom in this story? So at the end, her wisdom is in negotiating with the people to hand over Sheva ben Bichri and throw him over the ramparts. They can't throw him over the ramparts, so they throw his head. That will suffice, right? But they so that part of the chachma I get. We don't know what she said, but where's the chachma in the beginning of the story? Vatikra Isha Chachama. Min ha'ir. Right. So what makes her?
Well, it was smart of her to try to just engage him in the first place about it.
Okay. But that could have been anybody could have engaged with him. It's true that.
But they didn't.
Okay.
And maybe she was known, you know, her reputation.
Maybe.
Her reputation.
So that's why Chazal have a midrashic tendency to abhor a vacuum. Meaning anonymity. Midrashically, the Chazal will always try to fill in the blanks of anonymous persona, especially if they play significant roles. So the Medrash will try to fill in who she is. But in the pshat of it, we're left with just her wisdom, and it could be just in her desire to negotiate and find out what's going on. That's certainly part of it. But I think that she understands something else. And she understands something that not everybody does, which is who she's dealing with. Notice how she doesn't ask who the head of the army is. She doesn't say, okay, who's in charge here? Right? And it's not an obvious thing who's in charge here, because if you go back to the beginning of the chapter, go back just a couple of verses, right? Who is in charge here? Who did David put in charge here? Again, to chase down Sheva ben Bichri? Amasa ben Yeter, right? So started with Amasa ben Yeter. And when Amasa didn't show up, who else, who was second in line for David to put in charge of the story? Avishai, right? Avishai. And then when Vayomer David al Avishai, Atayir al Anushav ben Bichrim and Avshalom, so he tells to Avishai, go take the rest of your army. And then Yoav gets called along to come together with the group, because Nebuch is kind of dragged in at the end because his troops are going, so he has to go with them. So Yoav is the least likely person to be included in this story. And yet by the time we reach the city, after Yoav and Avishai kill Amasa ben Yeter, and after Yoav then takes his people and he starts to lead the chase, by the time we get to the siege of Avil ben Macha, right, then clearly it's Yoav who is driving the army. Correct? That was the statement made by one of the people standing around, the Ish Amad Alav Minarei Noav, Yoav, Vayomer Mi Asher Chafetz BiYoav Mi Asher LeDavid Achrei Yoav. After they killed Amasa ben Yeter, stood up one of the Na'arei Yoav, and he said, whoever follows Yoav, whoever wants to be loyal to David should follow Yoav. Okay? And so by the time the story chapter ends, Yoav is now back in charge of the army. That's a reality, right? So when they come to the city of Avil ben Macha, she comes out to the, she doesn't ask the question, who's in charge? She knows exactly who's in charge. She proclaims, Shimu Shimu Imuna El Yoav. Right? That's exactly her declaration. Ka, I want to speak to Yoav. I don't send me any low ranking petty officer in the command corps. I want to speak to the commander. I want to speak to the head of the army. I want to speak to Yoav. So she knows exactly who she's dealing with. Just in itself interesting. And then, going back to this text, she opens with this public proclamation. Shimu, shimu, imru na el Yoav. She's speaking in the plural. Speak in the plural, all of you, to Yoav, and deliver this message. Krav adheina va'adabra elecha. Come hither, I will speak with you, I will engage with you, interlocutor with you. I want to. And Yoav approaches. Now, it doesn't tell us how he approaches, he doesn't tell us who she is and what he knows of her, etc. He just says, she doesn't know who Yoav is. She's never met Yoav in her life. How do I know that she's never met Yoav? Because the next sentence is, Vatomer Aisha, ata Yoav. Right? Are you Yoav? And he says, yes. So he approaches her. Does he approach her with his art, which is guard down? Does he approach her with his kind of like in a relaxing fashion? In the middle of war. This is the middle of a siege. Right? So she's emerged from the siege. She's emerged from the walls. And she says to Yoav, I want to speak to whoever's in charge. I want to speak to Yoav. He's the man in charge. Yoav approaches. And they're having a conversation. She's not opening the gates, right? She's not opening the gates. How do I know she's not opening the gates? She's not bringing a whole entourage with her, and she's not inviting the whole army of Yoav in, because by the time they do a Sheva ben Bichri, how do they send Sheva ben Bichri over to Yoav? They don't open the gates and let them walk in, right? How do they send Sheva ben Bichri?
Over the wall.
Shoo, right? They tossed his head over the wall. So, this is war. And he approaches ready for battle. This, you don't walk into a negotiation of any kind in the middle of a siege with a member of the other side with your guard down, especially not somebody like Yoav. He's in the midst of battle. He's ready for. He approaches with his swords in their sheath, with his gun cocked, with his red, with his helmet on, bulletproof vest, the whole geschäft, ready to go. She has one task. And that's why she's an Isha Chachama. She can't get to a conversation with Yah before she does one thing. And that is, she needs to diffuse the moment. If they start a conversation, Vayikravele approached her, ready for war, dressed in his uniform, and she starts with, what are you doing here? You're going to attack this city. What are you? And she, right? The conversation's over before it starts. She is Nisha Chachama. She knows the trade. She knows the art. And so her first task is to diffuse the moment. Atomer Aisha, ata yoav? Are you yoav? Bayomer, Dani, yes. Okay. She's given him some respect. Is that you? Yes. And then she says, Atomalo, also brief, curt, respectful, maybe with a bow, doesn't say, but I would imagine, or a salute. Shema divrei amatecha. Hear the words of your maidservant, of your handmaid, of your eved. Meaning, she's already identified Yoav in a way in which she's saluting him. She's presenting herself as a servant, as somebody who respects Yoav. He's the master, she's the servant. There's already a different tone in that opening conversation. So Vatomelo Shema Divrei Amatech. And Yoav responds, Vayomer, Shomea Anochi. I'm listening. Shomea Anochi is different from Ani. And she doesn't say, okay, Yoav's position, right? One, two, three. He approaches, first words out of his mouth, I am, who wants me? Right? By the time she turns and says, Shema Divrei Amatecha, listen to your maidservant, I'm your servant, I'm your loyal, right? So now he's, Shomea Anochi, I'm listening. Okay, I'm hearing. What do you have to say? Speak your piece. There's an art to this conversation. The art of negotiation is really fascinating. And then she starts with a story. She doesn't even start with the question. She's not starting with a time of a case. Let me dear remember you, sir. What are you doing here? No, she's starting with a story. What's the story? Once upon a time, Evel Bamacha was a very important city, and there were all kinds of sayings about the city. There were all kinds of stories about the city, like the city of Chaum, and there was all kinds of stories. Would you like to know some of those sayings? Here, I'll tell you what they used to say. They used to say about the city of Evel Bamacha, Sha'ol Yish'alu Ba'avel, they would seek counsel of the people of Avel, and thus matters would be concluded, and peace could be obtained. And people of Shaul were very wise and very sought after for their intelligence and for their counsel. Shaul Yishalu Ba'avel. And the implication is, right, Yoav, you don't just walk in here with your guns cocked and ready to shoot. We're good people. You could learn something from us. You could benefit from this conversation. Okay, so that maybe the Rubber Rishana. Once upon a time, these people used to ask our advice and our counsel. Sha'ol Yishalu Ba'avel. They didn't just come and besiege the city. Anochi, now she gets personal. Anochi Shlumem Yisrael. I am but a loyal, faithful, peaceful member of the Jewish people. I don't understand what's going on. You come here with your entire army, ready to siege the city, ready to destroy. You want to kill an entire city of Israel? Inheritance of God, why should you swallow us up? What is going on? Now, here's already she's asked the question, right? But what question has she really asked? What question has she really asked? Has she asked the question, what about Sheva ben Bichri? Right? She hasn't said a word about Sheva ben Bichri. All indications are that Either she's feigning ignorance or she's in truth ignorant of anything related to the story of Sheva ben Bichri. How do I know that? Because what does Yoav respond? And what's Yoav's response to her? Yoav's response to tell is to introduce her to who Sheva ben Bichri is. There is a man from Har Ephraim. His name is Sheva ben Bichri, and he rebelled against the king. Right? Now he's telling stories. So now he's telling her the whole story of the last chapter and a half. What is she driving at? What does she think Yoav is doing there? If let's assume for the moment at face value that she really doesn't know anything about Sheva ben Bichri, which is why her response is so easy. No problem. Now you see how much of a warrior she is. No worries. We'll take care of it. His head is over the ramparts before the clock strikes noon. Not to worry. We'll take care of it. And now already you know what you're dealing with. But what does she think is going on when she first approaches it? Is she feigning ignorance? Does she know the story of Sheva ben Bichri? She just wants to hear it from Yoav? Maybe. Right? Or maybe something else is going on. Meaning?
Maybe she thinks he just wants to conquer the city for David.
Why would Yoav want to conquer an Israelite
city? And destroy it. I don't know.
What does the phrase Anochi Shlomei Mune Yisrael indicate? Why does she have to claim that she is from the peaceful, loyal people of Israel? What's she hinting at?
That they're not a threat.
Why would they be a threat?
I don't know.
That's my question. Why would there be a threat? Why would Yoav have to come to the city if it wasn't because of Sheva ben Bichri, and why would she have to present herself as Shlomei Amnei Yisrael? Right, there's a piece of the story missing.
Maybe she's trying to say that she's not one of the people that sides with them, if she knows he's there. Like, she's trying to say the whole city doesn't side with
him. Okay, if she knows he's there, but Yoav seems to think that she doesn't know anything about it because she begins to describe who Sheva ben Bichri is. And then she says, oh, no problem, we can handle that. Right? Well, if I take the story at face value, what does she think Yoav is doing at the walls of the city, ready to destroy the city? What does she think is going on? To which she has to say, I am...
The whole city, maybe, is against David.
Why would they be against David?
Well, there were a number of people that were against David at the most
work
recent
it backwards.
Event.
Okay, work it backwards.
During his
role. We're dealing with biblical history. We're not dealing with modern technology. Work it backwards. What does she think is going on? The last time Yoav was engaged in a military campaign, what was his role?
General.
Of what campaign?
You're right. Of Yehuda. No?
Of what campaign? What war?
Oh.
The last time Yoav was in charge of the army, sent by David,
was that against Ammon?
The most recent rebellion
was the rebellion of Absalom.
Oh, of course.
Right? The rebellion of Absalom. How known is it that the rebellion of Absalom was ended? Right, they went from, this is one chapter, they went from the rebellion of Absalom, they crossed back over the Yarden after Absalom died, the battle was declared won by the blowing of the shofar, they cross over the Yarden, they come to Yerushalayim, David takes care of some business, then he sends out Amasa and Yoav to take care of business. So the next thing you know, Yoav is marching in the city of Havel Bet Malcha. Right. From her perspective, she's dealing with a continuation of the rebellion of Absalom. As she comes out to negotiate with Yoav, the first thing she says to him is, we're loyal to the king. Anochi Shlomei Amnei Yisrael. What are you doing? You want to destroy an entire city? We are peaceful people. People used to ask our counsel. They would seek our advice. They would come to us to seek peace. Nobody, you don't come to Avel Bet Macha to make war. We're not loyal to Absalom. We're loyal to the king. What are you doing here, Yoav? Right. So, if I, if she's truly unaware of Sheva Ben Bichri, then she's unaware of why Yoav is besieging the city. The only other possibility is that this rebellion of Absalom is still rampant. We're only days apart, maybe weeks. One story, remember, from Perek Yotet to Perek Chaf. So that's when Yoav stops and suddenly realizes that there's a whole different issue going on. And so he turns to her and he says to her, Chalila, Chalila li. He doesn't just say no. He doesn't just say, no problem. If you give a Sheva Ben Bichri, we'll negotiate, right? We're going to have a negotiation over Sheva Ben. It's not a negotiation. Yoav realizes that their entire presentation is on false pretense. So he turns, and that turns Yoav. He says, Chalila, Chalila li, I'm not here to destroy. I'm not here to swallow. How quickly Yoav has moved from Hushai's model of battle to Achitofel's model of battle. Right? How quickly Yoav has moved from the all-out assault on the city of Evel Beit Ma'acha when he suddenly realizes that they think it's part of the rebellion of Avshalom, and that's not the case, to a very strategic, targeted, Lochena davar. This is not the case. Ki ish mehar Ephraim sheva ben Bichri shmo nasa yado b'melech b'David. We have one goal, target here, and that's sheva ben Bichri. Give it to give, he was the one who rebelled. Give him to us. Tnu oto levado v'chami ala yir, and I will leave the city alone. Oh, that she says, that's easy. We're not going to risk an entire city because of one guy. I don't care who he is. Watch for his head, it's going to come in from above. She comes back into the city in her wisdom and explains what's going on. Interesting. They cut off his head and throw it over Yoav. They didn't open the gates. They still didn't open the gates. After all is said and done, they still didn't open the gates. But they did take the head of Sheva Ben Bichri, toss it over, vayitka b'shofar, and the second time Yoav has blown the shofar, he blew the shofar to declare the end of the war with Avshalom. Now he blows the shofar to declare the end of the rebellion of Sheva Ben Bichri, and he sends the army back to their tents, vayoav shav Yerushalayim el ha'melech. And Yoav returns to the king. And that's where the story ends. So it ends with this very kind of almost a cute, I don't even know how to describe it, very nice, kind of warm, fuzzy story, other than the head being thrown over the wall. That's a little gross. But other than that, right, this story about the Isha Chachamah negotiating with Yoav brings Yoav down, walks him off the ledge, brings him back down to earth, says, have a cup of tea. I can just imagine it. To my mind, I read this parak and I always envision Golda Meir. Isha Chachamah, she goes to face, eye to eye, toe to toe with the enemy. She sits down, has a cup of tea. And you know what? A cup of tea and a piece of cake and a piece of strudel, it's all resolved. Yoav, no problem. Oh, that's all it is. Sheva Ben Bichri, we can handle that. No, okay. Always have this Isha Chachamah / Golda Meir model in my head. And that's a perfect fit for this story. And that's how the story ends. Now, interesting, and this is just what FYI, this Isha Chachamah is not the first time Yoav has had a role with an Isha Chachamah in Sefer Shmuel. If you remember back in chapter, oh, we're going back a little bit, but let's go back to chapter 14. Remember chapter 14? Once upon a time, we studied chapter 14. Chapter 14 was just after the story of Amnon and Tamar, and Avshalom were killed. Amnon, because he raped Tamar, a bad story, a very dark story after the events of Batsheva. And Avshalom ran into exile. And then a little bit later, Vayeda Yoav ben Tzruya lev ha'melachim Avshalom. Yoav realized that David was pining for Avshalom. So what did he do? He needed to be able to convince David to allow Avshalom back. Because Avshalom had said David was not going to allow Avshalom back. So he hires a spy. He hires somebody to tell David all the story. As if, and who is it? Vayikach misham isha chachama. Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa. Vayikach misham isha chachama. Yoav went down to Tekoa, took what is referred to in the Mepharshim as the isha chachama mitekoa, the wise woman from Tekoa, and hires, she puts on a whole show about how she's an Ovo, she's mourning because of the tax collectors coming for her children, and the whole geshefte, and finally she convinces David to allow Avshalom back. David sees right through the ruse, and okay, he knows that Yoav put her up to it. But there was, so there's really the story, two stories beg the comparison. Here you have an Isha Chachama engages with Yoav, or Yoav engaged her, and there you have an Isha Chachama who engages back with Yoav. It's not the same person, that's for sure. And she's in Tekoa, she's in Avel Beit Macha. There's a lot of very smart women running around in this country. That was true then, that was true today. But Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa, Vayikach Misham Isha Chachama. So the stories are very contrasting. There, she's hired by Yoav to go and convince David of, to kind of change David's mind and thereby allow Avshalom to return, which she successfully does. And in our story, it's the other way around, right? She is engaging with Yoav to try to bring Yoav around, to try to convince Yoav to allow for the peaceful resolution of the story. And the Isha Chachama here saves an entire city. She saves the entire city of Avel Beit Macha. The Isha Chachama that Yoav hired enables David to return Avshalom and spare Avshalom's life. So she successfully spares one life. But that one life then spilled into the entire rebellion of Avshalom, then cost the lives of tens of thousands. So I'm not sure who is smarter. Who is the, which one had the right? But nonetheless, that was the story of Avel Beit Macha and the Isha Chachama who saves the city. Questions? Okay. Which brings us in the 25 minutes or so that we have remaining. Brings us to the last piece of the parak. And what I have here are four verses that are just a list. V'yoav kol hatzava Yisrael. Yoav was over the entire army of Israel. Uvnei Yoav ben Yoyada lakreti v'yala pleiti. Uvnei Yoav ben Yoyada was in charge of the Kreti and the Pleiti we keep talking about. The Kreti and the Pleiti are this guard, this group of warriors. There's a medrash that says it's a reference to the Sanhedrin, but that's a very odd medrash. It's most likely that it's some kind of group, probably of non-Jews, mercenaries, hired by David or loyal to David, who were his kind of his king's guard. They served the king. And when David sent Avishai out to go and take down Sheva ben Bichri, he said in the beginning of the chapter, he sent out Avishai with Yoav's guard and the Kreti and the Pleiti. Right? All went. And this is a special force. Menel ben Yoyada is in charge of them. Ve'adoram alamas. Adoram was in charge of taxes. Ve'oshafat ben Achilud amazkir. And Shafat was the recorder. U'shava sofer. You had a scribe. Ve'tzadok ve'vyatar kohanim. You had kohanim involved. Right? They were in the temple. Ve'gam Yirai Yari ha'yakon le'David. And Yirai Yari was the minister to David. And that's the end of the story. That's the end of the chapter, but it's more than the end of the chapter. It's really the end of the book. This is the kind of summary you would find in Sefer Shmuel, sometimes in Sefer Malachim for sure. Literally, it's the end of a story. So here's, you have your summary chapters. Okay, this David was, this was his cabinet. He was back in Yerushalayim, and this is who was in charge of what. And what would be the next follow-up statement from this sentence? What would I expect to be the next sentence after such a conclusion?
I was thinking, and everyone lived happily ever after.
Well, they don't live happily ever after, but the next sentence should be, V'amelech David zaken ba bayamim yachusu b'abgadim. The king was old. He was coming to the end of his life, and they needed to appoint a successor. And so the successor was appointed was going to be Shlomo and Benayahu ben Yoyada and Natan and David. And then, but of course, Adoniyahu didn't like that. And the transition from where we are straight to the first chapter of the Book of Kings is a natural progression. Right. You see, everybody, is that clear? Right. Just natural, just moves one into the other. The problem is, of course, that that's not the case, because I still have, where are we, chapter 20? I still have chapter 21, 22, 23, 24. Still four more chapters. So if the book ended here, it would be easy. But the book doesn't end here. So the answer is that the book does end here. Because every one of these stories, and I'll prove them to you, every one of these stories is much earlier. This is your appendix, your annex, your postscript, your epilogue to the book. But they're not post-events, they're much earlier events. Why they're written here at the end of the book, we will have to explore. We're going to have to break that down and try to understand that. Maybe we'll have time today still to do that. If not, we'll do it B'ezrat Hashem when we reconvene after Pesach. But it's clear that the book ends here. We have reached the end of the story, chronologically, of David HaMelech. What's going on in the remaining chapters? I'll show you very quickly. It's very easy. You can see right away that they are earlier events. Perakaval. Let's just do a quick cursory look at the introductory sentence to each one. Chapter 21. Vayhi Ra'ah b'yimei David shalosh shanim. First of all, David, when he's king, is never called David. He's always called HaMelech David. He's only ever called David on his deathbed. Once he becomes king, he's HaMelech David, or HaMelech. We didn't refer to David as David, just, right, he's the king. Second of all, Vayira Abi made David shalosh shanim shana acharei shana vayevakesh David upnei Hashem. There was a famine for 3 years. David sought God's counsel, and God said to him, Vayomer Hashem el Shaul, and Vayomer Hashem, why is there a famine? El Shaul ve'al beit adamim al asher himit et hagivonim. Because Shaul and his bloody house had put to death all the Givonim. So he calls the Givonim and he says, what can I do to appease you? And the Givonim said, we want the children of David, of Shaul. So he gives them the children of the grandchildren of Shaul. It's a whole story. We learned this story when we learned the beginning of the story of Mephibosheth. There's no way in any universe that this story is happening after David's 40 years in the kingdom when he's returning to Yerushalayim after the rebellion of Avshalom. This is not David in Yerushalayim. Or if it is, it's very early in Yerushalayim. Right? This is where he's dealing with the Gibbonim. Shaul, you're talking about the death of Shaul and the story of Shaul having killed the Gibbonim. And when that occurred, and the story of Mephibosheth, Mitzvah Bat Aya, and he doesn't want to, and at that moment it says that he gives over the seven sons of Shaul to be punished by them. Vayachmal HaMelech HaMephibosheth ben Yonatan. And he has compassion over Mephibosheth ben Yonatan ben Shaul. This is not after he's returned from Yerushalayim and he has the whole conflict with Mephibosheth in favor of Tziva. It's a whole different world. So clearly, this story is much earlier. Agreed? One down. Next. 22. Shirat David. Vaydaber David la'Hashem et divrei ha'shira hazot b'yom itzil Hashem oto mikaf kol oivav u'mikaf sha'ul. Song that David wrote, composed the day that God delivered him out of the hands of all of his enemies and from the hand of Shaul. Anybody think that he's writing this Shira after returns from the exile of the rebellion of Avshalom? No. We could go through the whole chapter, and I think that would be self-evident, but I think that that's clear. Okay? Next. Chapter 23. Chapter 23, Ele Divrei David HaAchronim, Ne'um David Ben Yishai, Ne'um Agebu, Kam'al Mashiach, Hashem, Elokei Yaakov, Ne'im Zmiwot Yisrael. Fine, what's going on here? Ele Shemot HaGiborim Asher LeDavid, a list of David's warriors, of those who fought with David, his Tzva Giborim. There's a list of them. And where are they fighting? Who come by Yachba Plishtim? They're fighting against the Philistines, and David is exhausted, and David is tired, and he's thirsty, and he's hiding in Marat Adulam, in the cave of Adulam, and he Yerdush Me'ashloshim Rosh Ve'yavo Ktsir El David on Marat Adulam. They come to David in his hiding when he's hiding in the cave of Adulam, and the Plishtim are encamped in Emek Rephaim. David is in the stronghold of Mitzuda, and the Plishtim are in Bethlehem. I think it's self-evident. The Plishtim are not in Bethlehem at the end of David's reign. And Plishtim are gone after he conquered Yerushalayim. This is not a story that's of all and any relevance to David at this point in his history. Agreed? This is much earlier. Okay, that brings us to Parakhov Dalit. Yosef af Hashem lachot b'Yisrael, another moment that God was angry at Israel, and David started to count, he decided David to count the people of Israel. Count Yisrael b'Yuda, count the army. And he sends Yoav, and Yoav has a whole argument with Yoav. Yoav says it's not a good idea to count them, and he insists. And there's a plague that comes about, and David is punished for it. And he realizes that he shouldn't have done it. And he says, Chatati, and God says to him, I'm going to punish you. And he says, accept the punishment. And in that moment of the punishment, he comes out and he sees a malach standing over Yerushalayim, over the threshing floor of Aravna Yebusi. And he says, oh, that's where I'm going to build the temple. Temple? Buying the threshing floor of Aravna Yebusi, you realize that we're talking about Yerushalayim, Harabayit. David is sitting in Yer David. He's been in Yer David for 33 years. But suddenly there's a whole counting of the army after he comes back from the rebellion of Avshalom so that he can buy the place of the threshing floor of Aravna Yebusi and build the Mizbeach there. This story happens earlier. This story happens before David brings the Aron to Yerushalayim, when he's looking for a place for the temple. So all four of these chapters are much earlier. And that really is the key to understanding what's going on. We have essentially, let's go back here. Let's go back here. Right, these four psukim at the end of Shmuel Parakhav end the story of David. This section of the book chronologically ends here. The rest is a much earlier postscript. Why it's there, how did it come about? We'll break it down. But that piece, I think, is very important to establish. These four psukim essentially describe the end of this section of David's life. From here, we go straight to Ramelech Zaken Baba Yami. Agreed? All right. I've convinced you all. Excuse me?
I said agreed.
Okay.
Unless something else happened after that, but it doesn't sound like it.
From a chronological perspective, we go from here to Sefer Melachim. Now, not only that, I'll go one step further. This is not the first time we've encountered these verses. Virtually the exact same verses, in exact same almost role, we have encountered before. I could give you a test and we could wait until we figure out where you really want. Or I could tell you. So let's go back to the end of chapter 8. Just a quick review. Just a quick summary of what's going on in the chapters of Sefer Shmuel. Chapter 1 was his the death of Shaul in Har Gilboa and David's lament for him. Chapter 2 is the reign of Ishbosheth ben Shaul, and the beginning, the two split kingdom, David goes to Hebron, Ishbosheth is in Shaul. Chapter 3 is the war with Ishbosheth and the death Asael, and eventually the story of Avner, and Avner comes to David in chapter 4. They want to make peace, and Yoab comes back from the field, and he says, nothing doing, and kills Avner. Chapter 4 is also the Gibeonites who kill Ishbosheth, revenge for Shaul having killed Ishbosheth. For Shaul having killed the Gibeonim. If you remember, the Shaul killed the Gibeonim here in chapter 22, 21, or 23, one of those chapters there. So that's another indication that these chapters are out of order. And then in chapter 5, the people of Israel come to David and they say to David and Hebron, you know what, enough. We want to be one kingdom, one king, one capital, one kingdom. You be king over all of us. David says, great. And the first thing he does is he moves his capital from Hebron to Jerusalem. That's chapter 5. Then he deals with the Plishtim, battles with the Plishtim, establishes a kind of a peace around Jerusalem. He's now sitting in Jerusalem, the fortress, as the new capital of Israel. Chapter 6, he comes to take the ark from Kiryat Yarim, which has been sitting since the end of Shmuel, beginning of Shmuel, Sefer Shmuel. And he moves it to Yerushalayim. I'm assuming that the story of identifying and purchasing the land for the Mizbeach has already happened before chapter 6. Okay, so chapters 23 and 24 are before or around the time of chapter 5, 6. Everybody with me? See what's going on? Okay. Chapter 6, he brings the ark to Yerushalayim, and he's singing and he's dancing before the ark, and he has this little conflict with Michal, because Michal doesn't think it's particularly appropriate, and he says that that's what I do, I serve God, and that conflict doesn't end well for Michal. Chapter 7, David is ready to build the temple. Clearly, he's ready to build the temple. He asks Natan if he can build the temple. And Natan initially says yes. Clearly, he already has the place for the temple in chapter 24 before he asks Natan to build the temple. Just to reiterate that little observation. So comes to chapter 7 and he asks Natan to build the temple. And Natan says yes. Then Natan says no. Why does he say no? Because God says to him, we're not ready yet. You need to have a dynasty, you need to have an heir, you need to have a wife, you need to have, you've had a conflict with Michal, not good enough, we need to establish a dynasty before we can build a Mikdash. So that doesn't end well. And then David begins to fight his campaigns, and chapter 8 is a summary of all the campaigns that David fights, his campaign against Ammon, and against Moab, and against Edom in the south, and against Aram or Syria in the north. David expands the kingdom to the largest capacity, to the largest expanse of the kingdom of Israel, the empire of David, in that region. So far, everybody with me? Okay. Chapter 9, he begins to engage with Mephibosheth. Son of Shaul, he owes a debt to Yonatan. Where is Mephibosheth? He's out there in exile. Okay, so bring him back. Then he has this little conflict with Tziva. He doesn't know what to do with Tziva, so he has this conversation with Tziva and Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth is now going to owe a debt to Yonatan, so he tries to pay it. That's chapter 9. Chapter 10, we're back to that war with Ammon. Yoav sieges Ammon for 2 years. David says, I've had enough of this. I can't stay in the camp on a siege for 2 years. I'm going back to Yerushalayim. Goes back to Yerushalayim. Chapter 11, being in Yerushalayim doesn't go well for him. Bathsheba. Chapter 12, Natan's rebuke after Bathsheba. Chapter 13, Amnon and Tamar. Amnon rapes Tamar, Avshalom kills Amnon, Avshalom goes into exile. Chapter 14, David brings Amnon back from exile, doesn't do well for him, he's on house arrest, but he's not happy with house arrest, because the next thing you know is, chapter 15, all that rebellion, Avshalom declares himself king, David goes into exile, David has to leave Yerushalayim. The next chapter describes David leaving Yerushalayim, Nebuch, and doesn't expect to come back, and who he gathers along the way. In chapter 17, Avshalom comes to Yerushalayim. Avshalom comes to Yerushalayim, and he has counsel with Achitophel. He has counsel with Hushai. He does something with the Pilegesh on the rooftop. Chapter 18, all-out rebellion in the east side of the river. War between David's factions, between Avshalom's factions. Tens of thousands of people die. War finally ends with the death of Avshalom. Chapter 19, David comes back to Yerushalayim slowly over the course of time. Conflict between Judah and Israel. This tribe, that tribe. Chapter 20, Second Rebellion, Sheva Ben Bichri. End of story. Okay? So what I just did is summarize the chapters of Sefer Shmuel. Okay.
Did it happen in chapter 10 before the thing with Bathsheba?
That was the war with the siege with Ammon. The whole
description of the battle. When there was like a time when there was like a whole summary about halfway through. Right.
So chapter 8 includes pieces of the story of chapter 10, correct? Chapter 8 is a kind of a summary of all of his wars, and chapter 10 is the detail of the war with Ammon and parts of the story that are connected. If you bush it in the middle. Okay. Now let's take a look at chapter 8. The end of chapter 8, find the following verses. This is the whole description of all the wars that he fought. And then it says, Vayas David Shem b'shuvo miakotot Aram. When David finished smiting Aram, he had earned a reputation. And Vayasem b'edom netzivim, he put a garrison in Edom. Vayimloch, Vayosha Hashem et David b'chol asher halach. God enabled David to be victorious wherever he went. Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael. David reigned for all of Israel. Vahi David ose mishpat utztaka l'chol amo. David executed justice and righteousness for all his people. V'yoav ben Tzruya l'atzava, Yoav over the army. Yoshafat ben Achilud mazkir. Yoshafat was his recorder. Tzadok ben Achituv achimelech ben Eviatar kohanim. You had Tzadok and Eviatar as kohanim. Usraya sofer, you had a scribe. Uvneyao ben Yoyada v'yakreti v'yapleti. Uvneyao ben Yoyada is in charge of the king's guard, the kreti and the pleti. And Vnei David kohanim ayu. David's sons were ministers to his kingdom. And those are the chapters. The next chapter begins. V'yomer David, achi yeshod asher natan notar lebeit Shaul, the story of Mephibosheth. So I have exactly the same verses here as I have at the end of chapter 20. So what does that tell me? One of these two descriptions or lists is out of place. I'll tell you now, they're written by the same author.
Or maybe he kept the same people pretty much throughout.
Well, they are more or less the same people by the end of the story. No, there's some differences.
It shows that
why do I have to list the story twice?
What's that?
Why do I have to list this twice?
It's because it's like a pause. I mean, he finished one section of his life, then we have the recap, and then you go into the next section of his life. We have the recap
which again. Ends exactly in the same place. Well, now, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just saying you're between chapter 8, you have a summary, and then chapter 20, you have exactly the same summary.
But in chapter 8, he hadn't done his big sin yet, right? So that was like the top of his, you know.
Yes, yes.
Legal goodness as king. And,
yeah. 100%. That's exactly what the difference is. The difference is the difference between David in ascendance and David in descendance, meaning the world of David, as we know him, as we remember him, as we acknowledge David, Israel, Chai v'Kayam, David, King of Israel, God who is with him, the promise to David, the preach with David, the commitment to David, the notion of Mashiach Hashem, the anointed one who will establish the dynasty of the anointed ones of Israel. The whole image of David, if the story stopped in chapter 8 and we went from here to the book of Kings, we'd have a very different picture of David. And the truth is that that's the bulk of his life. The bulk of his life leads up to chapter 8. There's a unit in his life that starts in chapter 9 and ends in chapter 20, which is the build up to the sin of Bathsheba and the aftermath of it, right? All of that's one piece, but it's like a pyramid. So all the pieces leading up to chapter 8 is the David in ascendance, David the Great, David Melech Yisrael, the Noim Zmirot Yisrael, author of Tehillim. Everything that we memorialize and eternalize about David That's through chapter 8. The darker side of the challenges of David's life when he sins and how he comes back from it and how he regroups from it and how he responds to the Navi and how he eventually manages to find his way back to Yerushalayim and the re-engagement with God that has to go through this whole process. That's a lengthy process. That'll end in chapter 20. And we'll end with the same psukim. But there's a difference between David up to chapter 8. And then all of this is really one piece of the long piece of the story about Sheba and its aftermath. And that's what brings it all together. So those are the two pieces of the story. There are some subtle differences that are significant, but they're less the big piece of the story, right? Clearly, Yoav is first in both lists, right? Yoav is first on the list in chapter 8. Yoav is first on the list in chapter 20. That's not a surprise. What is interesting is the placement of who comes in second. Who is under Yoav? Right, so you have Yoav and Tzviah, that's back in chapter 8. You have Yoav and the army, and Yoshaphat, who's the Maskir, and Tzadok and Achituv, and Achimelech, or Avyatar, or the Kohanim. And you have at the end, Benayahu ben Yoyada over the Cretan plate. In chapter 20, one very significant move takes place. Yoav el Kol HaTzava Yisrael, Yoav is in charge of the army. Uvnayahu ben Yoyada, la Cretiv yala plate. And then you have Adoram Lamas, so a different person in charge of the taxes, and Yoshaphat is the Maskir, and Shvaz the Sofer, and Sadok and Yevatar the Kohanim, and everybody else in place. But the placement of Benayahu ben Yoyada next after Yoav, that's interesting. Why? And he gets a promotion. Back down here, he's the bottom of the list. Correct? Benayahu ben Yoyada v'kretzer pleiti. In chapter 20, he's at the top of the list. He got a promotion. Up underneath Yoav. But when we move from chapter 20 to the beginning of the book of Kings, don't forget the continuation here is directly into Sefer Malachim. When you move into the beginning of the book of Kings, something else happens. Who did Yoav side with in that battle, in that rebellion of Adoniel? He sided with Adoniel. Yoav ben Tzruiah and Avyatar sided with Adoniel. V'yazu achrei Adoniel. V'tzadok akoyin uvnayahu ben Yoyada. They and Natan and Levi, they stayed with David. And under Shlomo, Benayahu ben Yoyada, after Yoav is killed, Benayahu ben Yoyada becomes his general. So he becomes a very important person in Shlomo's reign. At this point, it's clear what happened between chapter 8 and chapter 20. Yoav has continued to become an issue. Between those two stories, you have everything that transpired, including the death of Avshalom and the murder of Amasa. And now the pieces are in place for Bnei Ben Yoyada to move up in ranks and eventually to become the right hand for David and for Shlomo. So that's where the story, these four psukim kind of end the chapter, they bring it all together, close the story, and we are really ready for the break, Pesach break, because we're not going to pick up until after Pesach. But what we have left now is to understand the four remaining chapters. Chavalef, we already learned. We learned it when we did the story of the Givonim. Chavbet to Shirat David, we'll talk about Shirat David. And then Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet. Chav Gimel is very simple. It's a list of names for the most part. And Chav Dalet, of course, is the story of the purchase of the land we'll get to. So we will, I can't promise we're going to finish it this year, but we are very close to the end of Sefer Shmuel.
I wanted to mention one other thing at the end there, which is that David's sons were in the first one, but they're not listed at all in the second time.
Right, so it's unclear which sons that's referring to. Is that referring to Amnon and Avshalom, who are no longer, right, because they were killed or died in battle? Or is it referring to somebody else? Yeah, but that's also true. Right? They... Okay, so for that, we will stop here. We will, just a calendar issue, FYI. Next 2 weeks of Pesach. Then after that, then we should be okay on the 6th because that's Yom HaShoah, but I think I'll have to assume for the moment we're okay. The week following, we will not have a shir because that's Yom HaTzmaut. And then we should be okay for the couple of Mondays after that. We're only going to go until more or less until Shavuos. And then we're going to be on hiatus for the summer, as they say. All right.